I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans! You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. Moise Bombito in Canada just beat Peru 1-0 in Copa America and are in position to get out of the group. Silly season is here, and oh, do we have thoughts and information on that? It's fun, and it might be bittersweet, and your Colorado Rapids just had a 9-point week, baby. Joining me now, still vibing off of his Father's Day vacation, a man who I would not sell for less than $4 million, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Good to see you, Matt. You know how I spent Father's Day?
How?
I took my father and my son, my son, to a LA Galaxy Sporting Kansas City match in Los Angeles. My first time at the Diggity. It was a really great experience. So, highly recommended. Another wonderful Travels in American Soccer experience. Incredible hosts with the guys from
News Across the Galaxy.
News Across the Galaxy. Thank you. And just the supporters groups were really lovely to me and just really awesome. So, you know, this is one of the best. Matt and I were talking before we started. This is one of the best things that MLS has going for it, which is if you're a supporter of an away club, you could show up, you know, you should make arrangements in advance, but you could show up at the tailgate of the home team and they will treat you like visiting royalty, which is not the way it usually goes in Europe. You know, if usually two supporters groups mix with each other, it involves chairs being thrown and bottles being smashed. And the only bottles that were being smashed in the parking lot at the Diggity were people who were exceedingly drunk, including the lovely fan who came up to me and was really, really friendly and really, really grateful and so excited to meet me. And after a few moments of conversation, it was very clear to me that this person thought I was the sports rabbi and not the soccer rabbi, because he asked me a bunch of questions and said a bunch of things where I was like, oh, I know who you think I am and it's not me. But he was so drunk, Matt, that I like did not want to burst his bubble. And then afterwards, I kind of tweeted at the sports rabbi, who is he's also an actual rabbi. He lives in Israel. He generally covers mostly basketball in the Israeli Premier League. And that's why this drunk guy was like so endearing. He was like, I love your stuff on basketball. I'm like, man, I ain't tweeted nothing about basketball in like 4 years. You definitely have got the wrong rabbi. But, you know, it's nice to be recognized. It's less nice to be mistaken for somebody else. But you know what? It's fun to feel like a celebrity wherever you go.
Who in media would I be mistaken for, Mark?
Alexi Lalas would come to mind immediately.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Although your positions and your opinions are not nearly as irritating or outrageous. I got to say, I don't know if you've been watching Copa, but like,
unfortunately, I have.
Copa's been fun. I mean, the U.S. won their first game with Bolivia, but the mid game and the after game, I was like, you know, cut to Alexi Lalas, cut to Carly Lloyd, cut to Alexi Lalas, cut to Carly Lloyd. I'm like, I need to watch anything else. Is there a Spanish version feed of the post game that I can watch? I won't understand any of it, but I'll enjoy it better. I don't know. I don't know if our listeners feel the same way about the post game coverage, but it ain't my cup of tea.
I think, Mark, if we're judging the comments on both of their social media accounts, well, I should say Carly's disabled comments on her social media platform, then, you know, I think generally there's discontent with some of their approaches. Granted, some of the stuff directed towards Carly was certainly inaccurate and sexist towards her, but also she did a very lawless thing of having a off the cuff, really bad take. And instead of being like, yeah, I could have said that a little bit differently, or like Pulisic's arrived in that he's already in his mid 20s. He's not up and coming. And also he's very much a second tier player. He's a great player on a great AC Milan team that could probably win a trophy next year. He's not Messi. He's not Bellingham. So instead of, you know, she had the opportunity to be like, slip of the tongue, my bad, guys, I'm new to media, I'm working on it. Instead, she doubled down, and some people on Twitter chose to be sexist towards her, which is disgusting and reprehensible and crossing the line. We'll talk about other people being reprehensible on social media later on the podcast, Mark, and other people just commenting that, like, you had a bad take and you didn't, and you doubled down in it. But listeners, if any one of you ever drunkenly runs into me and mistakes me for Alexi Lawless, I will do everything in my power to be empathetic and understanding and not burst your bubble, but also not antagonize you any more than you have already been antagonized by the 1994 U.S. men's national team equivalent of Gritty, the Philadelphia Flyers mascots. Mark, let's talk about, shall we talk about silly season?
Let's do it.
We'll start chronologically. So listeners, as you are aware, Rafael Navajo is a striker on loan from Palmeiras to Colorado Rapids, and his loan expires on the 30th of June. That is this Sunday. So officially his final game with the Rapids as of right now, as we are speaking, is this Saturday against LAFC. There have been rumblings. Mark, I have spoken to Porik Smith, Wayne Brandt. No, I haven't spoken to Wayne about this. Excuse me. Fran Taylor. Most of the players, Chris Armas, they all think that the deal is going to happen. The front office is handling it and is making this priority. Well, as of a couple days ago, they were making it priority number one. Whether or not it's priority number one because of another player, we'll talk about in a minute. And there was a Palmeiras account with like three followers that tweeted that the deal was done. And then there is a website that has not always gotten stuff right from a scoop standpoint. No soap. Palestra.com.brazil, NOSSOPALESTRA, is reporting, Mark, that,
bless you.
Excuse me. That the deal is done, and that what the, and are reporting that the deal is done, and it's a upfront free fee of $3.5 million, and then there are various performance incentives, probably games played, goals scored in a certain amount of time in the future, up to $1 million. So effectively Palmeiras potentially getting to that eventual evaluation of $4.5 million. I should say, listeners, that that news broke what, Saturday morning, so we're talking what, four calendar days, two business days later. If what this outlet and if what other semi-anonymous accounts are reporting is that the deal is already done, and we're talking here 4 days later, the fact that I don't know that, Tom Bogert doesn't know that, and the two Brazilian outlets that reported originally Navajo coming on loan to the Rapids don't know that. I very strongly believe that this deal is not done, or what is happening right now is not the clubs coming to agreement and then somehow there being a delay in terms of the term with the player. Mark, I am expecting this deal to still go down to the wire. I think that there is a possibility, albeit not likely, that Navajo is in the similar purgatory that Marco Ilicha was in last year, where there was a point where his loan expired. He was on paper returned to his parent club, unavailable for one or more games, and the deal was done later, and then ultimately he returned to the Rapids, and he never actually got on a plane to back home, nor did he start packing his boxes in his home to then move back as well. If I had to guess, Mark, I would say Navajo plays this Saturday for the Rapids, and the deal gets done next week, and there's a possibility that Navajo misses one or more of the games next week, including 4th of July against Sporting Kansas City. I would be absolutely shocked if by the time the third game that comes after this, so after St. Louis on the Sunday, Navajo is not an available permanent Rapids player. I would put the probability of that happening as less than 5%, possibly less than 1%. Mark, what do we make of this? What do we make of the fact that news and scoops coming out of Brazil are as silly as the Premier League, if not even worse than the parody account of Fabrizio Romano? And what do we think of a possible evaluation of 3.5 up front and then incentives up to a mil?
honestly, all that sounds realistic and reasonable to me. I mean, I have a hard time separating bogus accounts from legitimate accounts, just like the next guy. It's just very tricky. And
if only there was a website in which all of this content happened, Mark, in which blue check marks and things that made you come off as credible were assigned by merit and not based on E exclamation O N demanding $8 from you a month. If only.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I'll just give you a really adorable new version of this, which is Matt's making an interesting remark about X, a platform that I now only use for soccer because it's become so toxic I can't do my actual rabbi type business on there, on my other account. But Transfer Market has a rumor section, and it's organized by leagues or countries or whatever. And they actually even have like a percentage by the evaluation of each player. It just so happens that the Javier Navajo rumor is not on there at all. I assume that's just because it's too obscure. However, there are Moise Bombito rumors on there. So that's kind of interesting.
What's the percentage on the Moise one, Mark?
So the only ones that have percentages, I guess they only give percentages if it's an English transfer, or a high end transfer. So Thiago Almada, Weston McKinney, Marcel Hartel, Aiden Morris, and Callum Wilson all have percentages. Everybody else is just a giant question mark. So no idea on the Moise Bombito, but apparently, Matt, I will let you have it because you're the big time reporter between the two of us these days. But there are two rumors going around about Moise Bombito. You want to share those?
Let's touch on a few things as well on Hoffa. I think part of why Mark, part of why the outlet that got so much traction in terms of what they said about Navajo is that it's something that sounds reasonable based on how we've done talking. You know, my first thing when I look at a questionable outlet or a questionable reporter or just, you know, some random fan on Twitter, for example, Mark, I remember there was a St. Louis FC got a player from El Salvador, and there was a drug lord who had a not so anonymous Twitter account who he tweeted that an El Salvadorian player was joining them, and it turns out it ended up to be true. So my first question is whether or not something sounds reasonable, or it sounds like it's something that would be plausible. Josie Altidore to the Colorado Rapids, something that I think Rapids fans literally just made up or tried to speak into existence in off seasons past, never sounded reasonable to me because of how much he ended up because of how much his salary was relative to all other Rapid salaries that ever existed, and also was unreasonable because of ultimately how much value Josie Altidore would have had. You know, if Toronto FC was declining $5-6 million USD bids from abroad, what package are you putting together? Because nobody's ever had $5 million in GAM in the bank. You know, you're putting all of your GAM, a bunch of draft picks probably, and then a bunch of players in order to just get this one piece. It didn't make any sense. So I think why this rumor got so much traction is because the valuation is fair. It's not that far off, Mark, from what we had been saying the last couple weeks. You know, we almost had our bi-weekly Rafael Navajo stonk meter in terms of determining how much we thought he'd be worth right now. And right now, I would say if he told me it was 3.5, and that's the check that the Rapids are paying right now, and then if he ends up coming good in terms of X number of goals in the next year, X number of appearances, team performance as well, then he'll end up being worth that $4.5 million. And that's something that, Mark, for me, from a Rapids math standpoint, I think is a much easier sell for Porik and Fran to make to KSE right now, even without a potential huge check coming the other way for another player. Anything else we want to say about Navajo, Mark, or shall we move on to Moise?
Let's go.
So, listeners, there was a report Fabrizio Romano had an exclusive over the weekend saying that Club León is in Mexico and is Marcelo Balboa and William Yarbrough's former club, but Olympic León, one of the prominent second tier, so not Marseille, not PSG clubs in France, in Ligue 1, are interested in Colorado Rapids and Canadian center back Moise Bombito. And then Tom Bogert reported earlier today, maybe it was last night, that the Rapids have already rejected a $4 million USD bid for him, Fabrizio Romano was saying, Mark, that the player in the club, so Moise and Leon, have already agreed to terms. I've got some thoughts on what that means and how I think fans misconstrue what that means and how reporters mix up what that means. But Mark, let's start with I think it's good on the fact that the Rapids are turning down a $4 million bid. That tells me, Mark, based on just the numbers that we've thrown out in the scuttlebutt for what we think he would be worth, that the Rapids already think that he's worth more than as much, if not more than that. The Rapids have turned down a bid, listeners, that is already double of what the reported fee for Sam Vines is. So clearly the Rapids value him. They valued him right now monetarily twice as much as they valued Sam Vines in 2021, which is saying something about how they feel about the player and saying something about how other clubs certainly value him as well. Mark, anything you want to say, or shall I get to some of my insider stuff?
I want to hear your insider stuff. Nobody can focus once you've said something like that.
Okay, so a few things here. I've spoken to, this is not a key decision maker for people, just to be clear. This person is a technical person. This isn't like a ticket salesperson. And we were speaking about a month and a half ago about valuation point for Moise and just the, you know, if you were to get an offer right now, what would you want to see them at? Or like the, what's the absolute, like the, you know, the everybody has a price, what would you sell them for, Mark? You know, Aiden Morris clearly is worth $4 million to, you know, to Columbus Crew. As great as Ricky Pooch is, if Manchester City called up LA Galaxy right now and said, hey, we'll offer you $100 million for Ricky Pooch, Greg Vanney will personally pack up all of Pooch's stuff in his house and drive him to LAX to send him to Manchester. So we were bandying about this number, and I threw out to this individual $12 million, and they said that's not far off. And with the tone, wow, and the facial expression and knowing this person, Mark, that suggested to me that this person might even think not far off in that I might even be undercutting it, or the or I'm undercutting the number based on the potential of the player. So the thing that we have to remember here, listeners, from Moise Bombito's standpoint, he's already played well in two starts for Canada in Copa America, a major tournament. He's had four straight starts as a 23, 24 year old center back on a team that we know for sure is going to the World Cup in 2026. Mark, you might remember the solo pod that I did in which I featured the audio interviewing Moise Bombito right after he got drafted. And I talked about all the options the Rapids had at center back. And I described it as center back acorns. They had him. They had Mike Edwards. Blake Malone was still in the organization. No longer, unfortunately. I think they had just signed Daniel Chacon, or he just moved from Rapids to the first team as well. And then Abubakar Keita was coming back from injury at that point. And so they've got so many of these young center backs. The odds that the four or the five of them, they don't get a viable starter in MLS in a year is really, really low. And surprise, they ended up getting a starter. It's Moise Bombito. And then I said, the odds that one of them doesn't become a player, given their age, their profile, their national team situation, doesn't become a player that then has financial leverage for the club in the future at some point, is 50-50, maybe 60-40-ish. We now know that Moise has done that as well. So Mark, not only are we talking about Moise Bombito, the player he is right now, but given how much he's improved under the Rapids in the last 18 months, how much better of a player could he be by the end of this year if he does more great stuff for Canada in this summer? If he does more great stuff for the Rapids, yeah, as well. And Mark, you know, let's hypothesize here. I don't think this will happen. I think the if we're tracking the Rapids in real time, what is our absolutely we're selling no matter what price for Moise Bombito? And does a club come in for him by the time a ball is kicked at the 2026 World Cup? I would be absolutely shocked if Moise is still with the team. But if by some chance he is, Mark, and he ends up starting in a World Cup for a Canada team that gets out of the group and everything, at that point, Mark, we're talking $30 million probably in terms of, you know, a Champions League or a Premier League team potentially coming from, or at least that's not out of the realm of possibility for me here. So my point is that this individual who I spoke with, and I threw out the $12 million number, Mark, that's not just what Moise is worth right now. That is based on the fact that is the Rapids getting paid now for what Moise could be in a year, 2 years, post-World Cup, et cetera, et cetera. And so this brings me to, Mark, where I think Olympique Lyon is an interesting situation, because, Rabbi, they are part of a football group Eaglefoot Mall, and it's kind of confusing if you look at the Wikipedia and some of the other reports. The new majority owner, or the new plurality owner of Crystal Palace in the Premier League, is a part of this group, and then they also have Botafogo, who are in Portugal. But Mark, you'll remember that's the club that Reggie Cannon went to and then liquidated his contract 6 months later because Botafogo wasn't paying him. So there's a question mark there. So where I'm getting to, Mark, where the Rapids should hold out and maybe, if they are selling Moyes, get the absolute top dollar value they can get right now and not worry about a sell-on clause, is we have seen these football groups manipulate the financial fair play and the bookkeeping, because FFP at the FIFA level, at the UEFA level, and at the individual nation level kind of has this loophole that exists. FFP is in place mostly under the presumption that all of these clubs are independent financial entities, and there's still some loopholes. England's cracked down on this a little bit. I would not say France and Portugal have cracked down on that situation from a football group standpoint, how Manchester City will move players around within their entity, not necessarily to Manchester City, but within the football group, and the transfer fees will not necessarily be what that player's market value is because they're moving them within the club. And functionally, you're writing one check from one bank account to another bank account that is within the same entity, and you're just doing it to cook the books from an FFP standpoint. We see the Red Bulls organization, Mark, knew this as well. So where Lyon in particular are not going to want a sell-on clause is if they move, is that if he comes to Lyon and then maybe he needs an opportunity, he needs to go out on loan to Botafogo, then there's maybe a loan fee, and then having a sell-on clause associated with that would be in their disinterest from a financial standpoint. And if he's absolutely huge, Mark, then absolutely Eagle Football is going to want him eventually either to be sold, and they're going to want to cash in on that as much as possible, or they're moving him to Crystal Palace to play in the Premier League. And again, they don't want that on the books for a Premier League team that's mid-table-ish, doesn't spend a whole lot. And as we've seen, the Premier League is clearly, and the English FA are going after middle-tier teams, a Crystal Palace-sized club, from an FFP violation standpoint, rather than your Manchester Cities, your Arsenals, your Manchester Uniteds, etc. So I know there's been some bantering about, well, what's Moyes' value based on what the sell-on clause is. I don't know that you're getting a sell-on clause if he's going to Lyon, Mark. I have to believe there are other clubs in the top five leagues in France, potentially playing in Europe this coming fall, that are looking at him that are not a part of a football group where they could have that. But if Lyon's potentially looking at, we're going to bring in Moyes now, he's going to go to Botafogo to get acclimatized to Europe, and then he's playing here, and if he absolutely balls out, he's going to Crystal Palace for, on the books, a proper valuation standpoint, but actually, not actually, because we want to help out Crystal Palace, and that is the, that's our prime asset within the Eagle Football portfolio, like how Arsenal and the Rams are more relevant in the KSC world than the Rapids are. So for those reasons, Mark, I'm holding out. Certainly 4 million isn't going to do it. And the fact that, Mark, I'm saying it's potentially 12, like the, you know, if Lyon comes back tomorrow and says 15, I'll drive Moyes to the airport. I'm totally okay with that. But if we've got a huge gap between here, Mark, we're talking, they're not selling him for single digit million dollars without a significant sell on clause. And so these are the things that I'm looking at. And then to that point, Mark, I did tweet this out from Burgundy Waves account, but let me look it up here. I was at Rapids training and Chris Armas was asked about Moyes and the situation here, Mark. And here's the quote. Quote, I haven't heard anything more than interest. I'll leave it up to them, referring to the Rapids front office, to figure out what's the magic number, which, Mark, I'm ballparking right now at 12 million, possibly a little bit more, and how much real interest there is, end quote. Mark, what do you think about all this? What do you think about how the club is potentially handling this? What do you think about a possible valuation of $12 million on Moyes Bombito?
It's all very exciting. I mean, I think the biggest challenge about being the Rapids or any other kind of mid-level team in MLS, and even the high-level teams, is that if you develop a significant local talent, Moyes isn't local, but, you know, pulling him out of college soccer, giving him a year in pro soccer, and then letting him move on. The idea, of course, in MLS is that it's a selling league. Like, you want to sell on to bigger leagues. And the challenge of that, like with the Rapids, is that they evaluated talent with like Austin Trusty and moved them on. They evaluated and developed talent with Cole Bassett and Sam Vines and moved them on. They didn't quite pan out in Europe, so they moved them back. But the challenge becomes, like, if you always have your best young defender, your best young newly developed player, if you're always going to sell them, then you've got to continually either develop another guy behind him, or you've got to identify how you're going to spend the money that you get from him. And I think that that's always, you know, a challenge, because if you wait to sell Moise Bombito until after you win MLS Cup, then you've gotten your money's worth for him, proverbially. If you sell him in July, which is might be when his value will be highest, and it also might be the smartest time to sell him, also considering, like, he may want to go at that time, right? If he's saying, you know, I'm excited about this offer, and his agent probably says to him, because, you know, players get a percentage of the transfer fee straight away, then he will say, you know, I want to go. And if the Rapids say, we'd really like to hang on to you till the winter transfer window because that could help us win MLS Cup, it harms the player, it benefits the Rapids. If you do it the other way, you sell them in July, it becomes very difficult for Colorado to replace him midstream with anybody who will fill his shoes. I mean, basically, where are you going to find another guy who's the fastest player in Major League Soccer who's a center back? Like, that's not going to happen. So that's kind of the bummer for the Rapids. It was the bummer after Austin Trusty, which was the season after they sold Austin Trusty. The wheels came off the bus. It was a bad year for the Rapids. Everything went south. So how many more metaphors and catchphrases can I use for things were bad?
Well, we haven't referenced the Justin Timberlake mugshot, Mark. So, you know, selling Moise Bombito, this is going to ruin the tour, Rapids fans.
Nice. So anyways, that's I think the trade-off here, is that being a selling club and being a mid-table selling club is not a great position unless you are a big club like an Arsenal or a Manchester City or a Barcelona, who have a huge academy where they're just churning through young talent and, you know, next man up is a thing. Rapids 2 had a win the other day. It was great. Rapids 2 is doing good things, but I don't know that there's anybody along that back line where I look at them and go, you know, we're ready to go. I think the interesting thing about the Rapids, and we'll talk about this probably when we do the rundown of this past week and its incredible success, is that we saw, you know, a big switch in terms of the back line with Sebastian Anderson getting some run at right back, and Keegan Rosenberry playing left back in the midweek game. And Sebi is getting the glow up. I mean, I think he's basically been given the opportunity to play as a starting player. That means that the Rapids have a bevy of options at outside back, but and with Moise gone, Lalas Abubakar is doing a really good job of standing in for him. But, like, we don't have the young talent at center back as much as we do at fullback. So, you know, I that was my long-winded reply that has nothing to do with actual money. I don't really have a sense of, like, what the price for Moise would be. I think the difference for me between $10 million, $12 million, $15 million, and $18 million is kind of, like, academic to some degree, because it doesn't matter how much the Rapids get in return, it'll still be really hard to recoup that player. I mean, you know, the best way in Major League Soccer, or the most likely way in Major League Soccer of turning that money around, is to take it and buy a player who's on the backside of their European career. You know, go out and get the Gareth Bale type player in their final year. Take the transfer money that you earn and put it towards salary money, which is something that you can do in MLS with the way the cap structure works. The problem is, you know, that's not as exciting. I mean, I think if you're a really knowledgeable Colorado Rapids soccer fan, and of course you are because you're listening to Holding the High Line, then you know that the swapping of rising talent like Moise Bombito or any other young player in Major League Soccer who goes on to Europe, Antonio Davies is like the best example of this. You know, selling him and then using that money to buy somebody else is never nearly as exciting, no matter whether you're getting Gareth Bale or Olivier Giroud or any other kind of like seasoned European player. It's fun. It's cool to see a guy who has a lot of rings, but you know, you're saying goodbye to someone who it could do really amazing things very, very soon, and you would have liked to have hang on to him for maybe one more year.
You brought up Austin Trusty, Mark. So similar to how you know, the Rapids are technically a part of a football group if we're including Arsenal, and so I know a lot of Rapids fans who are certainly upset, and I think valid in their frustrations that there wasn't a sell-on clause from Trusty going to Arsenal for what we think is $2 million, maybe a little bit less, Mark, and then what was it? I can't remember, somewhere between $6 and $8 million. I'd have to look back at that number when he was ultimately sold to Blades. Who are the Blades, Mark? Sheffield United. Thank you. Ultimately sold to Sheffield United, and my understanding, and I have it on good authority, Rabbi, is that there was no sell-on clause. The Rapids didn't get any kickback. So functionally, what did Arsenal do, Mark? They took an asset and they made money back on, from a financial fair play standpoint, off of a asset that was developed within the Rapids system. And it wasn't obvious, at least at the time, that any of that money went back to the Rapids in terms of how they're spending. Now, the Rapids have spent more. Somewhere in there, is there a dollar that was technically allocated from Austin Trusty? Maybe, probably not. So there's that. So I will say to our points, Rabbi, is if you're selling to a football group, I think you have to get the most money possible for them. If you're selling it to a club that is going to be a stepping stone, so Belgium, the Netherlands, a lower tier German team as well, Mark, I would say a French club outside of one of the big three. So not, well, if it's PSG, get as much money as you can because he's not getting sold from PSG. But then, you know, certainly a Marseille or a Lyon. Maybe I would throw in Lille in there. I'm mixing up my French teams as well. If you are selling to a club that's not a part of a football group, so going back to the Belgium, for example, Mark, you know, so if Anderlecht comes in for the Rapids, would I take $8 million for him and then a 50% sell-on clause? That's probably something I'd be interested in. That's probably something Bombi would be interested in or be okay with in terms of what that would mean for his future and the ease upon which he could move on from Anderlecht. But you know, if you're coming in and you're understanding that you're not going to get the sell-on clause, Mark, then not only do you need to, that valuation, going back to the $12 million number that I threw out that didn't get confirmation or denial of, to be clear, is that you are selling Bombito not only for what he is right now, but for his potential. So you know, Bombito was a center back acorn 2 winters ago, and he's grown into a fantastic maple tree. And so, you know, Moise Bombito, maple syrup futures, Mark, you need to be able to cash in on that from a Rapids math standpoint. So if you're not getting a sell-on clause, like how the Rapids had for Sam Vines, we believe to be 50%, that, you know, was covering their butts in terms of if Sam absolutely crushed it with Royal Antwerp, then you need to get the max valuation. And in that regard, I don't think asking for double-digit millions of dollars, or certainly asking more than I guess that would be what, 7 figures, I don't think is out of the realm of possibility. Last couple of things that I'll say on this, Rabbi, if the Rapids were to cash in on this, I know some fans have asked where that money goes and what that is allocated towards. Under the current MLS roster rules, you can convert up to $2.1 million and change. I think it's like $2.115 million in that into general allocation money. I have it on good authority that that's what the Rapids did with the Sam Vines transfer. And then I think there was another, I can't remember it off the top of my head. I would imagine that is what Porrick Smith does with that. All of the leftover money from that gets distributed from the league to the club as cash. In the past, there were stipulations on what that money could be spent on, not necessarily on first team roster money. You couldn't convert it into MLS cryptocurrencies, but you know, you had to spend it on infrastructure or on the academy or something else. Those stipulations appear to be gone from my reading of the current roster rules and regulations. So Mark, similar to how Rapids fans were frustrated and asked the question of, you know, Austin Trusty went to Arsenal for a certain amount of money, and then Arsenal cashed in on that big without doing a whole lot with Austin Trusty as an asset. Where did all of that money go, either on the books or literally where was it spent? I think there would be a valid question that Rapids fans would be waiting to see if Bombito gets sold for $12 million tomorrow and, you know, 2.1 of that turns into general allocation. Where does the other $9.5-10 million go? And is that spent on the Rapids? Does KSC cash in on it? What does that look like? I think it's a valid question. Last thing I'll say, or last two things I'll say, personal terms. I've heard it from so many people when this gets asked about it and the way that it's reported, and Fabrizio Romano, who honestly is kind of becoming a parody of himself. What that actually means, or what that can mean basically, is the club reaches out to the agent of the player and will ask, like, hey, like, is our tier of club, is your player interested in coming here based on what we are as a club, where we are geographically, where we are in the football hierarchy? And then here's roughly what we're thinking. Here's ballpark your salary, and then ballpark where we think you are within our team. Do we think you could start? Or do we think you're on the bench? Are we going to look for a loan opportunity for you in the near future? And then also, here's roughly how long the contract is. And so there are plenty of times in which people have reported or have said they've agreed to personal terms, and it's basically, are you roughly interested in the opportunity before you, without negotiating all the details or actually signing to terms. On paper, you cannot sign a contract with a team without the transfer from your ownership club already being agreed upon to. Last thing I'll say, I'll throw this question to you, Mark. I do think there's a valid question here, Rabbi, about, is Moise moving immediately because of what it would mean from a salary standpoint, given that he's still on a second year generation Adidas contract and making what, $100,000? I think it's $107K and change. And how much of just moving clubs right now would be a resetting of the market in terms of the, here's my market value from a salary standpoint, and I am woefully underpaid based on my value to the Colorado Rapids. Mark, if it's really just immediately about Moise getting his value in the open market, like, if I were the Rapids, would I not look at giving him a contract extension? Like, the, you know, I'm just throwing this out there, Rabbi, but I mean, if he's asking for, if Lawless is worth seven, like, what if he says, you know, like, hey, pay me what you're paying Lawless? Like, I would say yes to that right now. Moise is, I should say one last thought here, listeners. I realize I've said four or five times, this is my last thought, but, you know, welcome to Holding the High Line. Is that Moise is represented by Axia Sport Management, AXIA, and according to Transfer Market, they have a lot of very prominent Canadian players, particularly guys on the Canadian men's national team. And if you look at players who they've had in the past, who are kind of that middle tier in terms of coming out of college or being approaching mid-20s when they ultimately move to Europe, it's guys who moved a lot. So I would say that Kyle Lahren is a really good example. And so we've seen, outside of the top guys and then the bottom guys who are having to work their way up, that those middle tier players, they have leaned towards those players moving more frequently when there are transfer fees involved. And as we know, that typically associates with a portion of that going to the agent. So are they moving the players in order to get more transfer fees, in order to get more checks going their way, or because the player is interested in club hopping? I think it's a valid question to ask about in terms of who's making decisions on Moise's future. Mark, I've asked you what the open market transfer fee valuation would be for Moise Bombito. Rabbi, if you were Porrick Smith and Fran Taylor, how much extra salary would you be willing to pay Moise Bombito? Would Moise be a tamable center back if you were making decisions?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the trade-off that you're asking an interesting question that I don't know that it has a practical answer, which is this contract up at the end of the season, or is this about you're talking about renegotiation?
I'm talking about renegotiation, Mark. Yeah, no, I believe it's he had the standard GA, so I think it was 1+3 options. So, I mean, he's under contract technically, I think, for another year and a half, 2 years, 2.5 years probably.
Right. So the challenge becomes why you would want to renegotiate and pay him. Because if you're going to sell him, let's say you're going to sell him winter, then you don't really want to renegotiate and pay him, because you're just going to be like, dude, you're not making a lot for us now, but you're going to make a crap ton of money when we sell you. So just wait 6 months, you'll be fine, right? You're not contractually obligated to renegotiate a contract. That's how contracts work, right?
Yeah.
So My take is I don't think that there's likely to be a contract renegotiation unless the Rapids lock him up for 2 years or 3 years, which I don't think we think that's going to happen, right? I don't think we're going to lock him up for, if they lock him up for a year, then that would be, that's the deal that we're probably talking about. If the Rapids sign a so-called 1-1, where they're basically like, we're going to lock you up for 2025. We're going to get one more year out of you. And then we promise to sell you mid-year or end of year.
Yeah.
Or sell you the way we sold Austin Trusty, which is to say, sell you in July on a, but get a loan back deal from the acquiring clubs.
That's interesting. You know,
since most clubs don't really need you to report for camp in August, they're fine with you showing up in October. Now we're cooking, baby. If I were the Rapids and I didn't get an immediately fantastic offer right now for giant amounts of money, I would try and renegotiate Moyes for 2025 now for like probably $1 million or maybe 900,000, something ridiculous that feels ridiculous right now, but feels good for Moyes on a 1-1, you know, 1 year plus a club option to renew. Knowing that I'm probably only going to have to pay that for 6 months anyways. So that's the deal that I would make. But to be honest, if you could lock Moyes Bombito up for one more year, you kind of are going to have to pay him almost anything. You know, I would go as high as like, and this is going to sound insane, and it is insane, and you shouldn't do it, but you could, $1.5 million for the year, because you're probably not going to have to pay him the full amount anyways, because he's probably going to leave in July. So I don't know. Yeah, that's my take. But I think 900,000 is about where I'd be.
Yeah, no, I would be. I would if he wanted max budget charge mark. So what's that? 800K. I would probably give him that in a heartbeat. If he wanted low level TAM, that's probably something that I think the market would bear. Would be okay. I'm not sure if we're getting our numbers in terms of, you said 1-1 mark, but I think it would be if they could structure to the contract where he's guaranteed through 2026 and then a team option for 2027, then you say, we'll have you, we'll continue to develop you, because you're still making some boneheaded mistakes. Like, yes, there are European scouts looking at you club level, Canada as well. Like, you still pass the ball to Anderson Julio at RSL, and he almost scored a goal. Like, you're still making some, you still are not yet a master of the basics. And are you in a better position right now in the next 6 months, in the next year, to become a master of the basics with the Colorado Rapids and then make a bigger move to a bigger club? We'll pay you what you're worth salary wise right now, and then move into an absolutely fantastic situation where you've got your pickup clubs that you can go to, and we've got to pick up how much valuation that you are. So that's an interesting question for me, Mark. And so I would say if I were locking Moyes up, I would want him through the end of 2026. And then you've got the team option. Because if you just go through, if you do the 1-1, we're guaranteed for 2025. Let's say you lock him up for 2026 going into 2026. He balls out at the World Cup. He walks for nothing at the end of the season because there's 6 months left, with a bunch of clubs who come calling after he does what I think he could do in the 2026 World Cup. Whereas if you have an option for 2027, then other clubs know, oh, they've got him for another 18 months. We have to pay out. And that's, Mark, where that's where the Moyes Bombito maple syrup futures go from Leon's opening bid being $4 million to being $14 to $20 million probably. And then at that point, Mark, we're probably looking at Champions League clubs playing in the group stage of Champions League, maybe not Premier League or, you know, PSG at that point, but that's where it becomes a possibility. What's good for Moyes' future right now that also sets him up in a position to be successful in a year, in 2 years when the World Cup happens, and then to springboard off of that as he enters his late 20s. That's the question that Moyes and Axia Sports Management have to answer. Those are the things that the Colorado Rapids have to consider if they potentially look at giving Moyes a contract offer, or as they are entertaining offers from Olympic Lyon and other teams. Okay, Mark, we're like 40 minutes into this podcast and we actually haven't talked about a Rapids game in which the Rapids got a 9-point week, which I think is the first time that has happened in the history of this podcast. So let's talk about some actual soccering on the field and not the idea of transfer fees and the silly season. Listeners, this past Wednesday, the Colorado Rapids played at St. Louis FC, and they won by a score of 3-0 off of a Georgi Mihailovic hat trick. They opened the scoring 9 minutes into the game when Georgi was left unopposed at the back post off of a bouncing long throw from Sebastian Anderson. Rafael Navajo doing some really good hold-up work to occupy a center back. It gets through Roman Berkey, it gets through the two center backs, and Georgi Mihailovic, Mark, had a 0.98 XG on a header from a yard out. Very well taken, good sir. St. Louis had some open looks for me in this game, Rabbi, albeit not from great angles and from distance. They were not very accurate. Their XG in this game was 1.73 to the Rapids 3.39. And even if we take out the Mihailovic penalty in stoppage time, that's still, what, 2.5? So at worst, listeners, in a terrible situation, the Rapids draw this game 2-2. In most situations, the Rapids should have won this game 3-1, 3-2. Edward Leuven gets a penalty in the 25th minute off of a Lalas Abubakar handball. Not the first time that's happened recently. And he misses the PK going off of the crossbar. Other than the penalty, Mark, and the handball, Lalas has done a lot of really good stuff. We'll talk about another gaffe he had this week in a couple of minutes. But, you know, take out some handballs and an own goal, and Lalas is doing a lot of really good stuff. And he and Andreas Maxu were absolutely fantastic, blocking a lot of those opportunities that St. Louis had in their 1.73 XG. Georgi Mihailovic makes it 2-0 on the hour mark off of a long throw. Roman Berkey collects it, and then Berkey tries to distribute it. And Georgi, Mark, I think does a really good job of showing that he sees what's happening, but not immediately like going for it. So obviously, so he baits it perfectly, picks off the short throw from the goalkeeper, and then turns and then finishes with his off foot bottom far corner. Chris Armas, Mark, called that potentially a goal of the year with the way that he set it up. Was that a mistake by Berkey, or was it a fantastic play by Georgi? Good question. I don't really care. It's 2-0. And then Calvin Harris, stoppage time, garbage time, draws a penalty, and Georgi Mihailovic sends Berkey the wrong way for the hat trick, his first hat trick of his professional career. Rabbi Mark Goodman, what were your 25 good things from this past Wednesday's win against St. Louis City?
It was just a dominant performance. I mean, I was mostly remembering St. Louis from their fantastic year last year, where they progressed the ball very effectively. They moved the ball around really, really well, and kind of split teams apart and move through them like a hot knife through butter. And this was not that game at all. The Rapids possessed the ball. They moved it around very well. Their possession was very good. The expected goals for the Rapids in this one, I think, was like, what did I say? I saw 3.73. It was really high off the charts. Very, very good. Go ahead, Matt. You were going to say something.
Oh, FOTMob had it at 339. I've seen
339. Really high.
FOTMob and MLSsoccer.com have been way off in some of theirs, Mark. I'm a FOTMob truther, so I'm going with 3.4.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this in past pods, but it's been a while since I mentioned that the different way XG is totaled by the three or four different websites that do it has to do with how you, because nobody publishes their formula. Because they're proprietary, you know, they think, no, our formula is better. And what they're basically doing is they're taking a bunch of Opta data and they're dumping it into a formula. And one of the big differences is how big you think big chances created matters, right? If you think a big chance that's missed was a huge XG generator and it should have additional points added to it over what the general expected goals chart would show based on the position of where the ball was shot, then that's going to change your whole kind of calculus. But anyways, my point is this. The Rapids looked really, really good in this game, and St. Louis looked less good, and it was a really phenomenal match all around for Colorado in a week where they were just vibing, just really, really putting it together and playing really well. Georgi Mihailovic had, you know, of course, obviously his most outstanding game. I think the fact that with two goals up and then a penalty in the final minute of the game, that the regular penalty kick taker, Rafael Navajo, ceded his position and or, you know, anybody ceded their position to Georgi. Was great. So that was just really good.
Fact check for you there, Rabbi.
I know. Wait, let me. No. Don't, because your face said it all. Yes. Darren Yappe came in the 82nd minute for Rafael Navajo. That being said, Georgie isn't necessarily default penalty kicker. So the fact that he gets in there, everybody steps aside and says, go get your hat trick, and the kid goes out and does it, is great. So
I could see where, like, the...
I don't like, but by the way, Matt does fact checks on me every once in a while. Sometimes they're really, really, like, gentle and polite, and they're just, like, kind of like a, you were close, Mark, but that was, let me just get it exactly right for the feed. Sometimes, like, he does it, and I'm, like, ready to leap through the Zoom feed and punch him in the nose. So that was this one. He made a face, and I went, as I was saying it, I kind of thought, like, Rafael wasn't in the game anymore, was he? But nonetheless, I still think the idea that a guy gets his hat trick because the rest of the team goes, you know, you take the penalty, it's your hat trick to score, I think is really good. Because I think, by the way, maybe it is Georgie's in a normal week. But the other way of looking at it is this. Cole Bassett, you know, probably could have been the guy. And the other thing is this. Wait. The other thing is this. And I think hat tricks are kind of a weird idea. They feel more like a hockey idea than a soccer idea. I'm not sure why three goals is that much more magical than two goals. Scoring two goals in a soccer game is a huge deal. It's soccer. It's really hard to score goals. Here's the other possibility, Matt. It's garbage time. You're up 2-0. This goal probably means absolutely nothing. Bring in anybody. Bring in Andreas Maxo. Like, let him kick it, right? Let, you know, let Darren Yappe kick it.
That's
Darren
a really
has no,
good point.
Darren
that's,
has no goals on the
that's
season.
A really good point.
On the career, right? Let anybody get a shot here. So, I don't know. I think I know that I'm speaking as a guy who doesn't play professional soccer and who does not know how these decisions get made. But I'm just throwing that idea out there. There's nothing magical about three goals in soccer. And when the goal is meaningless because it's absolutely at the very end, let anybody else take it. Back to you, Matt.
Yeah.
Before I punch you in the nose.
Point taken, Mark. I think the, you know, I think it was good, regardless of the logic behind Georgie taking it and not giving it to Darren Yappe to have him break his duck. The fact that Georgie took it and took it so emphatically, and as we'll talk about now, he's made two consecutive penalties. And to do that, Mark, when his first penalty that he missed in any competitive game was the one at Seattle that would have helped the Rapids win that 1-2-1 when they were up a man. So to see Georgie bury two penalties emphatically, send the goalkeeper the wrong way, and finish it off with a hat trick was absolutely fantastic. Two other good things that I have, Mark, to your point, you brought it up. Sebastian Anderson, I thought, did a really, really good job coming in, playing at his normal right back position. Keegan Rosenberry moved over to the left back position. I thought that was a little interesting, Rabbi. Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe your spreadsheet says something about this. I remember Brian Crookham telling me when Anderson was coming out of the academy that as a fullback, he was ambidextrous. So to have Keegan play out of position when Keegan with the Rapids has exclusively been a right back, and my understanding is Sebi growing up was a right back and a left back, to have that be the change, I thought was a little bit interesting. But in any case, Sebi comes in, plays well, locked things down defensively, a much improved performance off of, you know, his kind of shell-shocked situation at Houston Dynamo the week before the international break. And to finish that off, Mark, with, you know, the Rapids, when Sebi's in there, Rabbi, they've got two long throws FC when it comes to the fullback coming up and basically launching a soft corner into the box, and it sets up for the opening goal. Chef's kiss. Hooray. I thought the club did a really good job of being flexible with their tactics based on the situation and based on the game state as well, Mark. The game management in this. We're still trying to figure out, and maybe Chris Armas is still trying to figure out, we're a team that wants to mostly possess and then do some pressing when we're in home game, when we're at home. And I think when they're on the road, they're still trying to figure out what they are. Or they've shown tactical flexibility of they can sit back and hit on the counter like they did for long stretches at NYCFC. They can really try to go at teams and be aggressive in their press like they were against Real Salt Lake. And so I thought this game was a perfect marrying of all of those concepts of just understanding, thinking collectively, to use the Keegan Rosenberry term from the second, Rocky Mountain Cup game of the when should we press? When's a really good moment which we anticipate that we should sit back, wait for the opponent, do something on the counter? And when should we go forward as a collective, possessing, playing out of the back, and then put the opponent under the pressure? And so this, I thought, was a really good example of that. I still think they're trying to figure out what that is. Maybe Chris Armas is ad-libbing it a little bit, but in any case, it worked. Who cares? I'm not complaining. It's a 9-point week. Hooray. The one caveat that I have, Mark, that is maybe my one bad thing other than one critical Lalas Abubakar mistake in each of the last three games, one of which was not called for a penalty, one of which was a penalty that was saved, one of which was him being put in a bad situation and trying to do as much to prevent a goal and committed an own goal, and he could have prevented a goal being scored, own goal or otherwise, in that situation. Was the Rapids have played three teams, Mark, that I think you and I will agree are probably not very good. Austin FC are Sebastian Driussi dependent, and when he's not cooking, they're generally not an effective team, especially on the road. That happened 2-0 in the Diego Rubio revenge game situation. This game against St. Louis, they had won one game in nine. They hadn't been as good at home. And what was the whole mark about them last year is that they were a decent team who was massively overperforming their underlying numbers. This season, their numbers are way down. They've regressed to the mean, but also they are underperforming those regressed numbers. So St. Louis is bad. And we'll come on to it in a minute as well, Mark. You know, Montreal was missing, a five-man team and had no threat on goal whatsoever. Mark, if LAFC were playing this three-game week, if one of the Ohio teams, if Inter Miami with a healthy Lionel Messi had played this exact same three-game stretch, we would have expected a 9-point week. And so how much of what we've seen here is just the Rapids playing bad teams? Granted, they're beating teams that they should. And Mark, they now have 30 points on the season. They had 25 points all of last year. Mark, you know how many points it takes to get to the playoffs based on nine teams making the playoffs?
Somewhere in the 40s, like the
40 to 45
40s?
Would do it. So Rabbi Mark Goodman,
40 to 45,
40 to 45, depending on what year. And, you know, it's there's some variability.
I feel really good about saying low 40s. I feel really I think you should compliment me now so I don't punch you in the nose.
OK, let's say 45 for the purpose.
Where's
of the
my argument. Compliment, Matt? Where's my compliment?
Mark, you are a fantastic rabbi and a fantastic father. And you say so many smart things about this podcast. And I was so excited to do this pod. I was so giddy with excitement.
The funny thing is, I'm actually in a good mood and I don't need like an ego boost tonight. Like I'm totally good. But I'm just messing with you. By the way, listeners, This is the podcast that we do when we do it before I'm exhausted at the end, when it's not 1 o'clock in the morning when we're doing this podcast. I'm 80% better. At early hours.
You've got a midnight bedtime when we record at our absolute latest. And this is with us.
And sometimes I'm functional and sometimes I'm brilliant and sometimes I'm a hot freaking mess, friends.
Okay, Mark, let's stop happily arguing in front of the kids. I'm so happy, Mark. Okay, where was I? I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought. So St. Louis is potentially bad. And so did the Rapids just beat a bunch of bad teams? But so, Mark, let's say roughly what? 14 games, 13 games left to go in the season. And let's say at an absolute maximum, 45 points gets you into the playoffs this year. Mark, that is roughly 1 point per game the rest of the way gets the Rapids into the playoffs. The Rapids could play the rest of the season like a team competing for the wooden spoon and probably still get ninth place. And so, Mark, I look at an LAFC game coming up where if the Rapids are able to get a result in that one, and then we're looking at a very favorable double home game week, Sporting Kansas City on 4th of July, St. Louis then on the Sunday as well. Mark, if the Rapids are as good as, you know, their numbers right now suggest, that should be a 4-point game. Like, Mark, we're talking about, like, this is the team that mathematically we could be convinced has clinched a playoff spot by, before the leaves turn, before there is snow back on a basin in mid-September. That's what we're talking about. And that just speaks to how much better the season has been. So, Mark, I'm going to commit to what I said on the pod last week with Braden Norse as well. With the Rapids getting these two results as well, I am done talking about 2023. 2023 has been exercised based on how terrible last season was, how terrible that game at St. Louis FC that Porik Smith said was a new low for his time at the club as well. We have exorcised the demons of 2023. I am no longer talking about this season and how good it is and how fun it is and all the nuances of 2024. I am no longer talking about that where the benchmark is 2023. This is the new Colorado Rapids. They have turned over a new leaf. I am done bringing up last season to players who were here last year who hated it. I am done bringing up last season to players who weren't here last year, like Georgi Mihailovic, who then turns around when he's sitting out a particular drill and looks at all the members of No One Good FC and being like, you guys are talking about last year? What happened last year? I'm done. I don't care. I'm over it. Mark, any other great things, any other big things you want to say about St. Louis, or shall we move on to Club de Foot Montreal?
No, I mean, the amazing thing is that all I can remember from watching this game was how much we outclassed them. And then that carries over neatly into Club de Foot Montreal, which is that there weren't too many moments in this game where Colorado didn't look like the better team. It was just, you know, the weird thing about this week was that it was something that the 2023 Rapids could have never pulled off, but it was also something kind of just remarkable on its own, forgetting about last year, which is that Colorado met two teams who aren't doing super well in Major League Soccer this year and then totally took them apart. I mean, 7-1 was the total score of the two games. I mean, we dominated this week, and it's an amazing thing to see. Over to you, Matt, with the recap.
If we're using Kai Kamara's logic when it comes to own goals, Mark, technically the Rapids won on aggregate 5-0 this past week.
Nice.
Listeners, this past Saturday, June 22nd, the Colorado Rapids returned home to Dick's Sporting Goods Park and played Club de Foot Montreal and won by a score of 4-1. Calvin Harris with a first half brace. What a statement to make when he's mostly been playing second fiddle at right wing to Omir Fernandez. He opens the scoring in the 28th minute off of a doubleheader off of a set piece. Mark, that Calvin himself ended up drawing. Georgie puts the ball into the box. Calvin Harris finds a seam between the defense. Great header. Fantastic save by the goalkeeper. Calvin follows it up. Smashing header from 1 yard out. 1-0 Pids. And then on the stroke of halftime, some nice working play in the middle of the park. Rafael Navajo finding Georgi Mihailovic. And then a perfectly weighted ball into the space, into the gap in the mid, in the defense. That Calvin Harris runs fast enough to outrun the last defender, but not so fast that he catches up to the ball and forces the goalkeeper to come off his line. Beautiful finish past the goalkeeper to make it 2-0. Lal Sububakar put in a bad situation, 2v1 or 2v2 if we're counting the goalkeeper, in that situation where if he doesn't get to the ball, it's a tap in, and he puts that in an angle, Mark, where it actually goes off the post and into the side netting, another couple inches to his right, and maybe that goes off the post and Stefan's able to collect it. In any case, Mark, if we're pulling a HDHL Season 1 Lal Sububakar blame pie, there are three or four larger slices of blame pie I am putting to other people before I'm giving it to Lawless directly. In any case, Lawless sought out Chris Armist and actually apologized for the own goal. That's how seriously he took it. So it's 2-1 at 53 minutes, thanks to the own goal from Lawless Abubakar. Rapids closing the game out. Montreal doesn't look like they're getting a second goal. They had 0.27 XG in all of this game, listeners, and shots that technically come from own goals don't count on that. So that's 2.7 and them scoring 0 goals from that 2.7 XG. Rapids end up drawing a penalty after VAR gets involved in stoppage time on a corner from Georgi Mihailovic into the mixer, and Andreas Maxu battling with the center back Campbell for the ball, and it looks like Campbell, outstretched arm, handball, clearly obvious to me. Georgi takes the penalty and absolutely buries it. Rapids are up 3-1 at that point, and then really playing with their food in stoppage time. Some nice working play to really open things up and set up Rafael Navajo for really a simple finish to the far bottom corner. Georgi Mihailovic finds Bassett, who squares it to Navajo unselfishly, I should point out, and Hoffa buries it. Hoffa's probably then okay not getting to take the pen, even though he was on the field for this one with Georgi. Rapids end up winning 4-1. Mark, we'll start on the field. We have stuff to talk about off the field and in C38 and on social media and on Mois Bombito's comment section on Instagram, but we'll start on the field. Your good thing, Rabbi.
I mean, once again, I don't have a lot of interesting things to say this week. I apologize for just being kind of like overwhelmingly enthused about the team without any kind of high level technical thoughts. This is just another match where the Colorado Rapids came in and got the early lead and then just kind of kept going. I mean, there was a little bit of game states to this in the sense that Colorado took an early lead, you know, and really like looked very strong. I mean, I think the thing that stunned me the most was looking at the there's a great chart on the FootMob website or app called Momentum, which kind of shows possession. And it basically looks like Montreal didn't play. You know, the amount of both possession and direction of the ball, the Rapids just had this ball from beginning to end and were just taking chance after chance after chance. And they were just way, way up on Montreal in terms of they were pressing for that first goal. Calvin Harris broke through. He got that first goal. And then at that point, because Montreal had to chase the game and Colorado just could kind of hit in transition with like three or four guys going forward and then just surge forward, it was just an absolute dominant performance from then on out. Once they got the second goal at the end of the first half, and then they kind of weathered an early storm from Montreal, there was just no stopping them. And Montreal looked, to be blunt, very feeble. Mm-hmm. They made a couple of passes. They turned over the ball. They made a couple of passes. They, you know, kicked it out of bounds. They made a couple of passes. You know, they like, then they fouled. You know, it's like, it just wasn't, there wasn't a whole lot in it for them. And looking at their lineup before this game, you know, I wasn't on the pregame, so I didn't get to talk about who was going in. It's a funny little team. It's kind of a weird. And I remember looking at the lineup during the Rapids match and being like, I know that guy. He was on that other team. I know that guy. He was on that other team. I know that guy. He was on that other team. You know, Wilkin Ruan and Raheem Edwards and Kwadwo Opoku and Mason Toy are all like MLS guys who've been around. They've been on other teams. They've been bouncing around. They're good players, but they're all kind of role players. There's not a, those are guys who are like really talented first off your bench guys or really good shuttlers or anything like that. Like, there's not a single guy on this Montreal team who I go, oh, he's really going to stir the pot. Like, he's really a game-changing player. And I'm not really sure, you know, what the plan is in Montreal. They've been up and down for many, many years, mostly down lately. Right now, they're in second to last, and the only team that's keeping them from being, you know, the laughingstock of the league is Chicago Fire, who have been, unfortunately, since the good old days of Mike McGee, like 10 years ago, Chicago has been a laughingstock of the league. So that's all I got to say about this one. To be honest, it was a complete victory by the Rapids. I was very impressed with them. But on the other hand, this was a must. This was not a must-win game because it was important for the Rapids. This was a must-win game because Montreal ain't got nothing going on and ain't nobody impressed by them. And the Rapids were like, yeah, we're going to take you apart. And they did. And that was that. Business handled. Mischief managed. Go to you, Matt.
Maybe if there is a complaint, Mark, I would say in the opening 28 minutes, you know, Montreal was very much sitting back. It was a 5-3-2 for the most part, and the Rapids hadn't created a whole lot. And, you know, I think it was one really good sequence for Georgie, and he chose to pass when he probably could have shot. But so to your point of the game state changed drastically and massively favored the Rapids after the opening goal in the 28th minute, the longer this game went nil-nil with Montreal just sitting in a low block and countering and the Rapids being unable to break that down for the run of play, the more nervous it was going to get. So the fact that the Rapids' first goal comes off of a set piece and then that forces Montreal to come out of their shell, that then forces, that then leaves space for the Rapids to press, win the ball, and Calvin Harris to attack very directly, then scores the second goal. Montreal then has to further come out of their shell, and then that leads to, well, I guess there was the penalty at that point, but then, you know, Montreal's, you know, their spirits are broken by the time we get to the second minute of stoppage time, and they're down 3-1, and their only goal is an own goal. But so if there is a nuance here, Mark, or a here's a film study for the Rapids to look at from a film session, I've yet to see a home game where they've come up against a team that comes out really conservatively in a low block, usually a 4-4-2, and really break them down in possession. And that isn't to say that the Rapids have other ways of getting around that, set pieces, drawing penalties, scoring in transition as well. But, you know, like, the if if Gary Smith's Nashville SC mark comes in and plays a flat 4-4-2 and actually had Walker Zimmerman healthy and Hani Mukhtar healthy as well, like, do I think the Rapids could do better than 0-0, or what would they do to break them down? That's still something I'm waiting for them to kind of develop in their locker. They're doing great stuff in transition. They've got individuals who can make individual fantastic plays. They're drawing penalties, they're scoring penalties. They're drawing set pieces, they're scoring on set pieces. So this is my one complaint from the week here, listeners. That and Lawless Abubakar maybe keeping his hands to himself, and maybe the team not putting Lawless in a position to where he has to commit an own goal in order to prevent an actual goal and then apologize to Chris Armas when he was not the one who should have apologized. Those are my 30 seconds of complaints from this 9-point week. Thank you. The defense will rest. Anything else, Mark, do we want to say? Or shall we get to what happened to Moise that wasn't rumors from Olympique Lyon? Listeners, I'm sure you are aware. So Moise played on the Thursday, last Thursday, in Copa America. It was the opening game of the competition, and it was against Argentina, and Argentina ended up winning 2-0. And there is a play, I think, late in the first half in which Moise kind of has a hard tackle, or a tackle that looked potentially hard, on Lionel Messi. It ended up being fair. It wasn't called a foul or anything. And afterwards, Moise's social media accounts, mainly his Instagram, were flooded with, I'm just looking at these profiles, Mark, so I don't know who these people are from, but if you look at the photos, if you look at the other stuff they post about, they appear to be Argentinian national team fans, were racially abusing Moise. I saw multiple multiple comments that included a variation of the N-word, if we're using the Spanish one as opposed to the English language version of the N-word. And there were emojis as well as pictures of monkeys. This goes back to a longstanding trope, mostly in Europe, about comparing black people to monkeys, effectively saying they're subhuman or they are lower on the totem pole of evolutionary development because they are closer to them as well. It's very obvious what these fans, what these trolls, as Andreas Maxu said postgame, small people with small minds were doing. Certainly Moise, the only thing that he's posted or commented on with this was a post after all this happened, I believe on the Friday. He posted on his Instagram story a picture of himself clapping Canadian fans after full time from the Argentina game. And then he posts with the text, my beautiful Canada, heart emoji, and then no room for that BS. You saw Canada fans come to his defense and praise and cherish him. You saw Rapids fans, I'll give credit to Wanners from Box 8 Footy, who posted like the let's flood Twitter, let's flood the other social media platforms where Rapids fans exist with positive things about Moise Mbido. What do you like about him? What's a photo that you remember? What's a highlight reel that you particularly like? What's your favorite Moise Mbido moment? What's your favorite thing about Moise Mbido? C38 then comes out with two-pole TIFOs, Mark, and I should say these were larger, so maybe a 5x5 or a 10x10, so not the one-person two-pole that you would have painted in the past for C38. And one of them just said Bombito, and then it had two hearts with the number 64 for his Rapid shirt number, and then the number 15 in red for the number that he's wearing with Canada currently in the competition. And then a second TIFO two-pole that said no room for that BS. This has become, we're now quoting Moise Mbido, and there were a bunch of Rapids fans that signed it. I even saw Rapid Man signing it, Mark. I don't know what Rapid Man, like, what's his signature? What does he write? But so in any case, and then in the 15th and in the 64th minute, to reference his two shirt numbers for club and country, the C38 and the South Stands were chanting Bombito. Still waiting for them to say play up Bombi, Bombi play up, to reference the Portsmouth chant that Judgmental Jim and I have come up with. But so, and then I should say, Mark, pretty much every single person from the Rapids first team who did post-game media availability was asked about this situation and were unequivocal in their support of the player and in denouncing the behavior and what happened to Moise. Chris Armas said that he had spoken to Moise and that Pork had called him as well. And Mark, this maybe even would have happened on Thursday night as it was happening, not like in a couple of days afterwards, or, you know, like right before the game, right before the Rapids game against Montreal. And they made it clear, you know, he knows that he's loved here and that he's loved within the locker room, within the club, and within the fan base. Sam Vines denounced it immediately. He interrupted my question that I was asking him about it to say that, you know, it was unbecoming, and saying that they were sticking by him. And Calvin Harris even alluded to points where he's been subjected to racial abuse on social media before and said that he spoke to Moise about that, about being subjected to that and how you can handle that, and said that he's a strong person and he should be able to deal with it. And Mark, if Moise's performance tonight for Canada was any indication, other than one mistake, one foul at the end that gave a free kick opportunity to Peru when they were down a man and down a goal that Maxime Crépeau stopped, the fact that Moise came out, played really well, and has, you know, shut out that noise and maybe also the noise about his future as well, speaks to the character of who he is as a person. Moise Bombito should be judged on his character and how he is as a person and how he is as an athlete, not based on the color of his skin. And if we are judging him based on his character, then Mark, Moise Bombito is many wonderful things that these racist and disgusting Argentinian fans, these small people with small minds hiding behind a screen, racially abusing a young Canadian black man, he is so far above them. And that is what I'm going to, that I'm going to champion and be a reference for that joy, rather than get caught up in what are people who do not deserve the time of day because of their behavior towards him.
I don't have anything to add. I mean, Matt, you were there for all of the kind of like specific crowd response, which sounds great. Getting the response of the players. Well done, buddy. Nice job asking good questions to the players in the locker room and afterwards. There's, you know, it's disappointing that we're in 2024 and this kind of stuff still goes on. I kind of expect it, unfortunately, in the sense that, and you kind of referenced this accidentally at the top of the podcast, that like social media and particularly Twitter has become a pretty coarse place, and anything goes place. I referenced it like I had a bad interaction with a former, I don't know if where he is at anymore, but a regular in the commentary board of Burgundy Wave from back in the day came on my social media and said something really inappropriate, and you know, that was like also racially tinged and you know, hurtful. And I think people think that like they have the freedom to totally be jerks when they're on the internet, and I'm always disappointed by the anonymity of the internet. I've had arguments with people about this. I think you should really I think it's really questionable when someone gets into a social media space and doesn't use their real picture and doesn't use their real name. I think it's really
and
troubling.
Weaponizes stuff that they would not say IRL, where there was accountability because we know who's saying it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great old episode of This American Life where Lindy West talks about being abused online for being fat, and how eventually she did a whole article for a newspaper, I think for the New York Times, about kind of confronting her abuser, and how he basically cops to being, you know, he was in a really bad place and he was really, you know, kind of like using the internet to kind of lash out at people in hate for the things that he hated about himself. Do I think that about everyone on social media who racially abuses a soccer player, that they secretly hate themselves and they just need therapy and they'd be better? You know, I think a lot of them, but I think a lot of people just are jerks and they just decide to be jerks. I generally think that most of humanity are good, though. We're in Pride Month. It's the month to, I just came with my youngest kid who, identifies non-binary, from a Pride event in our local neighborhood. It's just a really warm and affirming world out there where your city council people and, you know, the local community come out and fly rainbows and everybody's accepting of who other people are and there's not a lot of judgment. That's the world I want to live in. That's the world most people want to live in, the world where people want to make people feel bad for the color of the skin, who they love, what religion they follow. That's a minority of the world, and hopefully we can banish it to the far corners of society and eventually move forward into that kind of Star Trek-y 24th century where we all look back at that time and think how barbaric and primitive we were.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, June 29th, the Colorado Rapids will be playing at LAFC. Mark, let's look at LAFC and where they are in the table. They are one of the best teams in Major League Soccer. They are first in the Western Conference. Well, they're in a three-way tie for first. They have the, I can't remember if it's games played. They've got one fewer game played and one more win than both Real Salt Lake and LA Galaxy. So in any case, 37 points off of 19 games played. They have a record of 11-4-4. They have a goal difference of plus 15. And at home this season, they are unbeaten. They are 8-0-2. Colorado Rapids are fourth behind that three-way tie for first. They have 31 points off of 21 games played. Their record is 9-7-4. They have a goal difference of plus 6. And away from the Richard this season, they have a record of 4-5-2. There's been some shuffling up in terms of the roster, Mark, since when Rapids fans would have been familiar with LAFC. Dennis Bawonga is still there, albeit he's cooled off a little bit compared to his usual competing for MVP, competing for the Golden Boot in the left wing position. Mateusz Bogusz, Mark, has absolutely gone on a heater since the last time these two teams played, and he's been moved up to a right wing position, even though he's normally in a midfield for LAFC in the 4-3-3. And while Kellen Acosta is no longer a part of this LAFC midfield, it is still very good, albeit slightly old in the form of Ilya Sanchez. Tillman, the lesser of the Tillmans, so not Malik, is in midfield as well. And then Edward Atuesta, you might remember, was with LAFC, was a part of that team that won MLS Cup against Philadelphia Union, and he got sold, I believe, to Brazil, and then he came back, so he's now in the similar role that he would have been previously. LAFC's defense, Mark, is not as good as it's been historically. Aaron Long, for me, relative to, I think, the hype that he had moving over from Red Bulls as a free agent, has been a little bit of a disappointment. They've been leaky, particularly in transition. And they also have Ryan Hollingshead, who's been their left back for a couple of years now, who's very, very good, a goal-scoring left back. So it's going to be a big test, Mark, for Captain Keegan Rosenberry, with him and Ryan Hollingshead, two very good-looking, very well-styled men with facial hair at that. And Hugo Lloris, who's in goal as well, speaking of good-looking, stylish men with beards. But he's also, Mark, for me, been a little bit disappointing. I know he came in, and I think that that move came because they thought it would help them get Olivier Giroud, and because they thought Lloris just overall would be an improvement over Maxime Crépeau. And if you've seen what Crépeau's done with Portland Timbers, and in particular what he's done the last four international games for Canada, I would say Lloris, from a shot-stopping standpoint, certainly has been a disappointment, and looks, I won't call him washed yet, Mark. There's still some adjustments to getting used to MLS and everything, but in any case, that is LAFC's roster for the most part. Of course, saving the best for last, the second highest goal scorer in the history of Major League Soccer, former Colorado Rapid, Kai Kamara, is up top, and he did score against San Jose Earthquakes to then get one over Landon Donovan. So it is now him and Chris Wondolowski, who are 1-2 in MLS. Kai came off, I believe this was his LAFC debut off the bench, Mark, and did not look particularly great. Granted, he had just signed with the team when LAFC came here to Colorado, and the Rapids ended up coming back to win that game 3-2. But he is starting up top. He is getting set up with crosses in from Ryan Hollingshead, from Edward Atuesta, and he is occupying bodies to then make life easier for Mateusz Bogusz and Dennis Bawonga. And he's doing this at, what, 37? I think he's going to turn 38 years old in about 12 minutes. So he's fantastic, and I have to imagine, Mark, he is absolutely going to be up for this game against the Colorado Rapids, especially as a starter. Kai is a salty human being, and he loves scoring goals against his former teams. Mark, what do you see in LAFC? What do you see in the Rapids returning to, not Bank of California, it is now BMO Stadium, for what has historically been a house of horrors for the Burgundy Boys?
I'm annoyed that there are two BMOs in the league, and I get that, like, you do whatever the sponsor tells you to, but, like, a BMO field and a BMO stadium is breaking my brain a little bit. But I kind of understand. Although it feels like Bank of California wasn't Bank of California very long. I think I read something somewhere about how they got out of the deal because they didn't, I don't think they went the full distance on it, or maybe they did and it just wasn't a very short contract, but I'm starting to be over these stadium names. Anyways, that's not actually what I wanted to say. And what I wanted to say wasn't really connected to our upcoming game. The other thing I wanted to say was this, which is it was a couple games ago when I was in San Jose to see the Rapids play them, and the San Jose press box was all, and the guys on that podcast that I went on were all pretty much shocked that Luchy Gonzalez was getting as much latitude as he'd been given. And a couple games later, everybody who I kind of saw on San Jose Twitter was basically like, can you believe Luchy hasn't been fired? And I haven't heard anything, but he lost 6-2 to LA, and at no point in that match did they look decent. And I don't think Lucci's been fired yet, right?
No, Luchy got fired today, Mark.
Oh, there it is! There it is! Good correction, Matt. I was about to go on a whole round of like, how come they haven't fired Luchy Gonzalez? And the answer is, they fired Luchy Gonzalez. I was spending a lot of time with the dog and playing video games and trying to catch up on season two of, trying to binge rewatch season two of The Bear in advance of the new episodes of The Bear dropping.
So good.
Which, it dropped tonight. Apparently they dropped it. They decided to drop it 3 hours early. Because they wanted to give us all a present. But it's unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, all 10 episodes dropped tonight. So, and I'm 2 episodes away from refinishing the end of season 2. This is not the question. What we're supposed to be talking about, podcast listeners are thinking like, Rabbi's not real on topic tonight. What do they put in his water? And the answer is nothing. Nothing. I'm just doing, this is one old fashioned. Basically, I think you undersold LAFC a little bit. Matt was like, I'm concerned, there are problems, da 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 da. They're in first place. They have 37 points. More importantly, they haven't lost since May 4th, and that was to San Jose, funny enough. Matt, do you know
when their two losses are to the Rapids and to San Jose Earthquakes?
Well, they lost to Minnesota at the beginning of the season, too.
Okay.
So they have 3. Well, and they lost to Salt Lake. Although, yeah, March 2nd. So that one counts. They have 4 losses. But yeah, the last loss they have before May 4th is March 30th to Colorado, 3-2. So if anyone can beat them, it's the Rapids, because the Rapids have proven they already can. That being said, it's real hard to beat this team. If Dennis Bouanga decides to get on it, he will get on it and he will destroy you. And that is, very difficult. This team has a lot of weapons. You know, Olivier Giroud hasn't joined the team yet and won't till the July window. But that's a bummer, because I think, you know, there are people, there are definitely like a couple hundred people who will show up to this game in LA and be like, I can't wait to see Giroud. And they'll be like, keep waiting. He's not here yet. So that's there. I think the other thing that's interesting about LA is this amazing soccer team where, they're really talented and deep with really fantastic players, and none of them have been called up for national team duty, right? Like Bouanga is going to be there. Kai Kamara is there. Bogush is there. Hollingshead is there, Long is there, Lloris is there. Like, they didn't lose anybody. I don't know about Murillo with Colombia. It feels like he should be called up, but I don't think he was. So that's one of those other things. Like, you know, we always get at this time of year, Matt, the controversy over why MLS plays through international breaks. And the answer is kind of because they have to, and also because a lot of other leagues around the world play through the international break when they don't have a lot of players at the highest levels of international football. So I'm never upset that MLS plays through an international break. I do note that there's always a little bit of unfairness, because if you're a really good team and you lose 2 or 3 players to national team duty, you know, you're hindered. Whereas if you're just below that top tier, like LAFC, you luck out and you don't lose anybody. So like Inter Miami is like, you know, they're minus Messi, and minus Suarez, right? And so they have to make do. They're pretty talented without them, but other teams like LAFC, they didn't lose anybody, because that's the way the world works. So anyways, I think LAFC's been fantastic this year. They're probably going to win the Western Conference again, mm-hmm. Although RSL are making a good charge at it. I do think this is a winnable match for the Rapids because, you know, they've been so fantastic for so long. And I don't know, you know, whether that can continue. And Colorado is really, like we talked about all podcasts with the vibes and the 9 points and the so on, Matt. Colorado's really cooking. I mean, like, form matters. And Colorado is as dangerous a soccer team as they've ever been since, I'm going to be honest, since 2016. I don't remember this team being this absolutely electric. I mean, Mihailovic is really hard to stop. Cole Bassett is really playing well. You know, we have a striker who scores goals. The defense is really hard to beat. And it's six players deep now, right? Mm-hmm. Sam Vines got sat down and the team is probably better for it. And Sam Vines is at least an average MLS fullback. So there is nothing going wrong with this team. For me, that means the Colorado Rapids could go into LA and come out with a 2-1 win. I think that that's a reasonable expectation.
I'm not going to predict a win in this one, but so to your point, Mark, I think let's start with the fact that LAFC has been a house of horrors for the Rapids. Now, normally how this matchup ends up going, listeners, is that LAFC will come in and depending on their circumstances, they might rotate the squad. That might be a little bit lackluster. I'm still waiting for Carlos Vela's first performance that is good in Commerce City. And that's kind of varied the results. Sometimes the Rapids get a surprise win. Sometimes it's been a draw. And there's been a few games where the Rapids have straight up outplayed LAFC. And that's fantastic. When they go to Southern California and play at LAFC, it's been absolutely terrible. The Rapids normally come out. They play small. They play like they're scared of a team that is on paper better than them in way better form. And invariably, one Rapids player makes one mistake. And that leads to a goal and that it completely opens up the floodgates. And then at that point, LAFC is cruising. It could have been 8-0 the last time these two teams played last season. And what was that, Mark? Robin Fraser's, I think, third to last game for the Colorado Rapids. Gomez could have had a hat trick in the first 10 minutes and ended up being 3-0. So I'll go over here are all the times that Colorado Rapids have played at LAFC. 2018, LAFC's MLS expansion season, 2-0. 2019 decision day, that was 3-1. That's one of the five games in which the Rapids have scored in. That was Kai Kamara scoring to tie at 1-1, Mark, and then it was all bad after that. Rapids didn't play at LAFC in 2020 because of COVID. 2021, a closer game, that was 2-1, Barrios scoring, but I think it was 2-0 at that point. And then the last two times they played in 2022, it was 3-0. In 2023, it was 4-0. So on aggregate, the Rapids have played five games at LAFC. They've lost all five of them, and they've lost by a combined score of 14-2. And the two players who scored goals against LAFC aren't on the team anymore, and one of those players plays for LAFC. So the question I have, Mark, the problem statement for me, for the Burgundy Boys this week, is they're in the best form that they've ever been going to LAFC. This is the best version of the Colorado Rapids who have ever played at LAFC. Can they go there and can they play toe-to-toe? Can they manage how they're approaching it from a tactical standpoint? Can they think collectively? Can they not make any mistakes that then it makes it easy for LAFC to score the opening goal in the first half, certainly in the first 20 minutes? I feel like LAFC's always scored a goal in the first 30 minutes of these fixtures. And can they go there and can they play like a bigger team? Can they go there and not play small? Respect, but do not fear the opponent. When the Rapids have played small, they've gone there, they've been under a siege mentality and absolutely gotten swamped. Can they avoid that? And can they be prepared to avoid that? And in doing so, Mark, can this have a playoff atmosphere or playoff implications given where the Rapids are in the table and given how good the Rapids are starting to think that they're capable of being? Rabbi Ken, do you remember the 2021 game at LA Galaxy, the 2-1 just slugfest with the G's? Do you remember that game at all?
Yeah, me and Total Recall in any given match is never very good. Unless it was like a playoff match.
So in any case, Mark, we both said, I think you were the one who said it first, actually, on the pod the next week of like I'm starting to believe that result was signal. That was an indication that what the Rapids had done to that point in 2021 was not a fluke. The Rapids are capable of doing so much more. And I remember that was the game afterwards that Jack Price went to go hug Robin Fraser and said, and for the first time he verbalized it to the coach, like, I think we could win the whole thing. The Rapids knew they were a good team. They were starting to believe that they were a great team. that was the game that showed they could do something later on this season. Or that was where on paper they could believe we can end up being at the end of the regular season one of the best teams on paper in MLS. If the Rapids go there and win 2-1 against LAFC, Mark, like at this point, like they're finishing top four. I'll say that I'm ready to have that conversation. But if they can just go there and not play small and get a result, even if it's a 1-1 draw in which LAFC was clearly the better team, that will be a positive performance and a positive result. I would almost prefer, Mark, the Rapids to lose a close game that has a playoff atmosphere to it in the second half where both teams are going for it and just LAFC is more talented, but the Rapids play big against them. Then I would prefer them to come out, be totally defensive and smash and grab a 1-0 result. I care more about the optics and the performance will lead to how I feel about the result and what the result means more so than the result being unearned or being noise as opposed to signal. And then just the last thing that I have to say about this one, Mark, the club did a really good job of preparing for Diego Rubio and him being a known quantity and what to do to shut him down a couple weeks ago with Austin. And that, I think, is another really good test for the Rapids this week coming up against Kai Kamara. How many years did how many training sessions did Kai and Lal Sububakar go up against each other? If I'm not mistaken, Mark, from a club connection standpoint, I believe Zach Steffen would have overlapped with Kai Kamara as well when they were both in Columbus. So how much familiarity did they have with each other? Can the Rapids anticipate what Kai Kamara is going to do, and can they stuff him and prevent him from doing his thing just like they did against Diego Rubio? Now, then the question is, can they do the same thing to Bogush and Dennis Bouanga? And that is going to be a tougher task for the Rapids defense, certainly. But if they're able to do that, they've got a chance. And if they're able to do that without playing small, without ceding a bunch of possession, and providing a threat to a lesser version of the LAFC defense, then these Colorado Rapids have an opportunity. And more so, they will further prove this is a different Colorado Rapids. This is not your 2023 sad pits. Anything else? Shall we get out of here, Rabbi? He's giving me the thumbs up. Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMetPollard, and at @Rapids96podcast. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you'll find Mark's written material. That's where you can become a Highliner. That's where you can pay. That's where you can get merch. We got search on for sale. Bargain deal if you want some of the old merch that's been hanging around in the Michael Azira Memorial Podcasting Basement. Send us an email using the email address rapids96podcast@gmail.com, or get at us with questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. You can find my written work at burgundywave.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Listeners, maybe you're bringing a plus one to the 4th of July game. Maybe you've got a roommate, a friend, a neighbor, somebody at work who's not doing anything for the 4th. Take them out to 4th Fest. Show them the tailgate. Show them one of the best days of the year for Colorado Rapids fans. Show them the largest outdoor firework display in the state of Colorado. And to help them prepare for that, share this episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red and have them ask you, if they're not a soccer person, what the heck is a 9-point week? Listeners, we'll see you next week before the 4th of July.
Peace.